Good day. Welcome to the Corey Morgan Show. We got another big, busy one ahead. As always, lots of news breaking, lots of craziness happening. I guess, you know, it's what that curse and blessing about living in interesting times. They're certainly interesting, and there's certainly lots for me to go on about, and I will. So, yes, this is live, guys. I see E. Sharp and Jordan already used comment scroll right on. I appreciate that. Send your comments my way. Send them towards my guests. I don't necessarily read them all out on the air, but I do see them all there, and I do appreciate them. Lets me know you're listening and helps keep the conversation rolling. So I got a couple of guests on today, so it's going to be a pretty packed show. Fergus Hodgson is going to be on. He's going to discuss his new book, which is Financial Sovereignty for Canadians, which, offers a lot of, well, I guess I read it, bleak outlook and such on the, you know, where Canada's economy is sitting. But then he offers a lot of advice, perhaps, what you should be doing to protect your own finances to avoid going down the drain with the rest of Canadians as things move along. So we'll talk to him. And Franco Terrazano from the Taxpayers Federation is going to pop in for a quick hit a little later in the show. And he's going to talk about something related to what I'm just about to rant about. So let me get on with that. So let's talk about, yes, my favorite gang there, Trudeau's Liberals. And they've moved the proposed general election date ahead by a week to ensure that 80 MPs who wouldn't previously have qualified will now be eligible for the gold-plated federal pension plan. Now, the Liberals are claiming they moved this date because it clashes with a religious holiday. That's a load of crap, guys. Come on. We've known the date of that religious holiday, what, for probably a few thousand years. They suddenly realized now that was the date? Of course not. No. They realized something else has happened. So what's changed? Well, the Liberals are facing the reality that they haven't a hope of winning the next election. Their poll numbers have collapsed and they continue to migrate downwards. Even if they unload their wildly unpopular leader, they likely can't keep the ship from sinking. And many are quick to point out that most of the MPs who would qualify for the pensions due to this change of date for the election are Conservative members of Parliament. And that's true. But it doesn't really matter because most of those members are looking at comfortably being reelected. The change was made for the Liberal MPs who are either going to be fleeing before the next election comes or be kicked out on their asses in the next general election. And while it's a good thing that the writing's on the wall for this terrible administration, this also signals that the Liberals have entered lame duck mode, and that's going to be costly for all of us. See, the only thing worse than a Liberal government that's trying to win an election is a Liberal government that isn't trying anymore. I mean, let's face it, Justin Trudeau isn't a thoughtful or pragmatic prime minister. He's a simple man, driven by ideology. Trudeau's going to be pushing his obsessive agenda of trying to battle climate change through carbon taxes and attempting to buy himself international love and respect through transferring Canadian tax dollars to other nations. Now, his efforts are going to fail, but he's willing to spend Canadian citizens into penury trying. When Trudeau convinced he won't win the next election, remember, he said he doesn't care if he's popular anymore. That's good. He should stop caring because he's not going to be popular again. But he's going to focus on building a legacy for himself, and we're all going to suffer dearly for that. Look back to Justin's father, Pierre, when he notoriously appointed over 70 of his pals to plum government positions during his last couple months in power. It was a poison pill that crippled his successor, John Turner's chances of winning the next election. But Pierre didn't care. He just wanted to make sure his friends were well cared for on the taxpayer's dime as he went out the door. Now, if Pierre Trudeau did that much damage in a couple of months as a lame duck leader, just think of what Justin's going to do with a year and a half to play with. Cabinet ministers will be doing the same. We can expect a flurry of sole-sourced contracts to well-connected Liberal companies. Yeah, I know that's been happening for years, but now that the party has lost open re-election, they're going to become even more bold and blatant with their influence peddling and favors for friends. Liberal cronies are going to be jammed into high-paying positions within Crown corporations, and if those positions run out, I won't be shocked to see if we have new Crown corporations formed in the next year and a half. We're going to see more judges, ambassadors, countless special envoys with high-paying roles but indeterminate agendas or obligations. They're going to get appointed to things all over. Things are looking bad in Canada right now economically and socially, but prepare for them to get worse. We got where we are today through the actions of a government that was trying, albeit poorly, to implement policy while garnering favor among citizens. Now we face a year and a half of governance from a government that no longer even ostensibly cares what we think. We're about to acutely feel the pain of a system that gives people no means of imposing accountability upon governments between elections. Even if Trudeau's support dropped to 5% nationally, we're stuck with him. He either chooses to step down or calls an election. I mean, clearly Jagmeet Singh's never going to bring him down. Singh's as close to power as he's ever going to get, and he knows it. He's not going to rock that boat. And let's not forget, according to the Constitution, actually, Trudeau could theoretically hang on until the fall of 2026 before having to call an election. The election date can be adjusted at any time. The Liberals just proved that. Sunny ways are long gone. Trudeau said as much in his clumsy and awkward way recently when he said it's not his job to be popular as he tried to defend his failing carbon tax. He's convincing himself that he's martyring his political career for the larger cause of battling climate change. He thinks he's saving the world and that history will look on his actions kindly, even if the voters don't. He's wrong, of course, but nothing's going to convince him otherwise now. There's nothing more dangerous than a person who feels they have nothing to lose. Canada's now facing an entire government that feels that way. So I hate to tell you guys, but we're up that creek and in for some tough times. Get ready to strap in. All right. That's what I got to bitch about today. Let's see what else is happening in the news. We've got a treat today. Dave Naylor is in studio with me.
Look at this.
Face to face. I can't even take my shots at you, kind of, because I don't have that safety of a glass studio wall.
No, I know. So this is what it's like. This is where it all happens.
It's where the magic happens.
Yeah, we're having some internet trouble, so I figured I might as well. What the hell did we ever do before Al Gore invented the internet?
True. That's true. it is pretty sad, though, when, let's see, technically, I think from the studio to your desk is about 40 feet. And we were, for a short time, crippled with what are we going to do if we can't stream you in until it occurred to you, I could just kind of actually go in there and sit down with them.
There you go. Wow. There you go. So I hear congratulations are in order.
Oh, on which front?
Well, but you've got a new addition to your family.
Oh, you're speaking about that horse, aren't you?
Yes, I think hopefully Nico's got a picture he can throw up there of your... there it is. I mean, what a cute... Is it a boy or girl?
It's a boy. It's a colt, a leopard pal.
That's a beauty.
Leopard Appaloosa. See, I am not a horse person. Jane is the horse person. That's her horse, and that's her horse's colt there. So, yeah.
Nice.
Jane's pretty excited.
Does it have a name yet?
It does, but I don't know it offhand.
Corey.
I'm going to get it when I get home.
You're supposed to be a father.
I'm not a father, but God. I don't like horses. They smell bad. They step on my feet when I try to pick their hooves, and they bite me.
Yeah, I got trampled by one when I was a kid, knocked unconscious.
See, it sticks in the head,
I've always been a bit careful around them. Never go behind
Jane
them.
Jane is quite thrilled all the same. Anyway,
right, well, we'll have to let people know next week what the colt's name is. Yeah. So, yeah, despite all the internet hassles we're going through, holy cow, what a busy morning, politically wise. Scott Moe was among all those premiers yesterday who tried to... get a personal invitation to talk to the finance committee and was told no, this is about the carbon tax. But some other committee invited him today, so he was on there explaining his opposition. And apparently Alberta Premier Danielle Smith will be doing the same thing tomorrow. Smith herself has just wrapped up a press conference in Edmonton, ostensibly about immigration. She's written a letter to your friend Trudeau demanding Alberta get more control over immigration. Especially Ukrainian immigration. We've got the second largest population of Ukrainian immigrants in the country, and Smith wants to bring in more. But I think the big story of the day is what's happening in the city of Edmonton. Post Media actually broke the story this morning that the province is looking at maybe intervening and going in and helping Edmonton, auditing their books and seeing what's going on. Western Standard source this morning told me that Edmonton's economic situation is dire, extremely, extremely dire. And the issue dominated Smith's press conference. She said, you know what, we're here to help, but it's got to come from Edmonton and Mayor Sohi. Basically, we're waiting for a letter. We're waiting for a request for help. Apparently, she said there is a letter coming to Municipal Affairs Minister Rick McIver this afternoon, alleging all sorts of nasty stuff going on at City Council that may be enough to get them in to intervene. But, this is our capital city that's apparently, could be, I'm not saying they're going to go broke, but apparently their finances are in really, really rough shape. Poll out today showing the UCP is leading the NDP by 15%, a good healthy lead, even with... I had Nenshi in power. Daniel Smith would still kick his butt. Big rally held in Duncan that we're reporting on. There was an incident in the washroom where a transgender person allegedly assaulted some kids. So there was a big rally out there today. And I know you've commented on this on Twitter already, Corey. Cadbury, the latest company to go woke, has changed the name of their Easter eggs to Jester Eggs. I guess they didn't want to offend any non-Christians.
It's,
what happens when you go woke?
You go broke.
You go broke.
They're going to figure it out. Yeah, it's as I said, you know, they've done this with Budweiser. They did it with Target. Why do you guys not really? You've built a market, and those eggs are gross. I mean, I don't. They're just nasty in my view, but because they made them such a special seasonal thing, they built a brand, and now these foolish clowns are going to rebrand it, and they'll just fall to every other dollar store chocolate that's out there. So what? Yep.
So you don't like horses? You don't like chocolate?
Oh, I like chocolate. I just don't like those weird fake Easter cream egg things with that.
Oh, yeah, the gurky stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. No,
agreed. No. Agreed.
Give me straight chocolate.
So that's what's going on, Corey.
Right on, Dave. Well, thanks for coming to join me in the studio
today. Love it.
Much appreciated. And well, now I'll drive you back out of here into that newsroom to write up.
And we'll see you on the pipeline tonight, assuming the internet works.
Yeah, we'll see. All right.
Thanks, Corey.
Thanks, Dave. That is our news editor, Dave Naylor, in studio. A rare treat, guys. And yes, lots being covered, all sorts of stuff. That's some serious business. If we're talking about the province stepping in and intervening on the capital city, that's, boy, that's just starting to unfold. So this is that time I like to remind everybody that the reason we can do this, the reason we're paying for Dave and somewhat paying for internet around here is because you guys have subscribed. So thank you very much for your subscriptions if you've subscribed already. And if you haven't yet, it's $9.99 a month, guys. $100 a year, well worth it. Just like a newspaper subscription. You know, we're just changing with the times. New outlets like ours aren't dependent on the government. We're independent. And the reason for that is because we're accountable to you and you guys buy subscriptions. I mean, we're just got to get used to that. You know, we never thought twice about paying to have the newspaper delivered to your door once a day. Shouldn't think twice about paying for a couple or a few of your favorite news services so you can get past the paywall, support that, and get that good information, especially considering the mainstream. You know, we won't cover this sort of thing. So, yeah, let's see what else is going on. That Easter egg thing, you know, they just can't help themselves. This is what happens. The graduates, the woke, the lunatics, the ones we saw in the 90s going through post-secondary, now they've found their way into corporate positions. These are the marketing gurus. And guess what? They're idiots. I mean, the bottom line is your agenda to maximize the sales of your product? Is your agenda to make sure that you brand it as well as you can and get it out to people? Or is it to pacify the blue-haired lunatics who are offended by anything and everything that goes around out there? Well, these nutcases that are getting into marketing think that their task is to pacify the woke. And how's that working out for them? Like I said, how'd that work out for Budweiser? How'd that work out for Target? It's not going to work out for Cadbury. I mean, chocolate, think about it. That's a competitive field. I mean, the amount of junk food providers out there of all sorts. If you want to stand out from the crowd, you need unique brands. You need things to grab people and bring them loyally to your product. And part of that was that Easter cream egg thing. Like I said to Dave, I don't even like the things, not to my taste, but it was something that they'd every year people would see it come out. It was specialized. Think of it like the McRib. You know, if you give a sense of anticipation, people will actually go out of their way to get a product that's actually not all, even all that good, but because you've made it into something. And now they just dynamited that. Decades and decades and decades of a brand that was built and loyal followers, and they threw it in the toilet because they listened to the advice of a woke imbecile. We're going to see more of it. We're going to see more of it. These guys, as I said, they've unfortunately gotten into corporate positions of power. And I guess, you know, shareholders have got to start speaking up. They got to say, that's it. You know, get a hold of your directors. Like, what are you doing? I want the company to get a return on my investment, not for you to make social justice statements or any of that crap. And that's the thing with the private market. As long as the government stays out of it, they're welcome to dynamite their own brands if they like, I guess. But the shareholders should have something to say about that. When we get into government, it's a little difficult. The shareholders are voters, and they don't necessarily listen to what we want or do what we want. But they manage a whole lot of our money, unfortunately, in our future. And that segues me into talking to my guest here, Fergus Hodgson. I had him on the show before. I believe it was a couple years ago. He was outside, if I recall, and there was a thunderstorm approaching. We had to kind of keep you a little short. But it was a good conversation for what we got out of it. Hey, welcome back to the show, Fergus.
Corey, thank you so much. I'm a big fan of the Western Standard. I promote it to many people, and I appreciate just the limited free or independent media that exists in Canada. And yeah, it was a couple of years ago. I think I was on the road in North Carolina. Yeah. Yeah, when we last chatted.
Yeah, and I see you're in, it looks like a much more weather stable environment for today, which is good. I mean, it's a lot to pack into the short time I have you. I downloaded your book. I've read about 2/3 of it so far. There's a lot packed in there and a lot to think about. That financial sovereignty for Canadians. I guess I'll kind of go in the order of how you wrote things. Like you've been outspoken on financial issues and economic issues, precious metals and things like that for some years now on social media, but now you've packed it all into one book, particularly for Canada. And it starts out pointing out first before you give any of the advice and what you can do about it.
Yeah, exactly. If you don't understand the gravity of the situation in Canada, you're not going to make the necessary changes or responses. And one of the problems, which we were touched on briefly before, is that Canadians live in a sea of government propaganda, both the explicit CBC, which is a state outlet, and then the bought-off media outlets, in addition to, let's say, the control of information through government schools and universities. And so then even when it comes to government reporting of official statistics, they are misled, especially when it comes to the likes of the Canada Pension Plan. So I want Canadians to understand that the trajectory is, let's just say, unfavorable. And Canada is going to become, in my opinion, in the next 20 or 30 years, more like a post-First World nation, much like Argentina. And if people want to understand what that is like, just move to Atlantic Canada right now, because they're further along this path.
Yeah, I mean, we've got ballooning debt. We have a pension plan that, I mean, they did fix it a bit. You know, it's, what, 33% funded, but it's still a pay-as-you-go sort of system for a pension that really isn't all that good.
Absolutely.
And we've got, the numbers that are coming up often where people talk about is our GDP per capita, and it is dropping dramatically and fast, especially if we compare ourselves to our American neighbors. I mean, that's a very accurate measure of the potential wealth we have, and we should all be pretty concerned about this.
Yeah, so over time, this is, even if the policy policy differences between Canada and the United States are not huge, that marginal difference over time causes greater and greater differences in terms of the people who go there or who leave. And so Canada has unfortunately bled some of her best talent and attracted less ambitious immigrants than would come to the United States. And this breaks my heart, because I care a lot about Canada's future. And I see, you know, I write a lot about this in the book, about whether people should make that decision to leave or not, because Canada still is one of the better countries in the world to live in. And there's a great history there. There are a lot of many wonderful people, beautiful nature. I mean, there's a lot to value in Canada, and it breaks my heart to see the communities there coming apart.
So one of the big, I guess, you know, tenets of wealth in North America in particular has always been the dream of home ownership. That's been a foundation. You expected, you work, you save your money, down payment, you can start in your own little home. Chapters calls it the fading dream of home ownership. I mean, for you, it's become very unachievable, like that economic goal just within reach any longer. And it doesn't look like it's going to get there anytime soon.
It's not going to change anytime soon. The problem is that we in Canada, we have a whole, let's say, layering of interventions, right? You've got zoning, occupational licensing, you've got all sorts of subsidies that basically inflate the price. And so, yes, everyone knows this, or should know, that Toronto and Vancouver have some of the most expensive housing on the planet. And that's not just expensive in an absolute value terms, that's expensive in terms of the incomes that people can bring in. So people need about 10 years of their gross income to buy a house in Toronto and Vancouver. And of course, that has spread to all their surrounding areas, because people have moved out trying to find cheaper places. So Victoria, or let's say even places like Hamilton, Ontario, whatever, all the surrounding communities, they are also inflated now. And these, you know, for better and for worse, are the high population centers of Canada, and often where the employment opportunities are too. So there are more affordable places. Obviously, Alberta or the prairies offer more cost-effective housing, but you have to look further afield to find that. And unfortunately, people go where the, like I said, the employment options are, and they tend to be in Vancouver and Toronto. And that's why, you know, that's why the, and Ottawa, of course, That's why the house pricing has ballooned there in particular.
Yeah. So getting beyond that, say if people were looking at investing in a home for the future, if that's out, one of the bigger social programs, you know, we already touched a little bit upon it. If a person's working and renting, thinking, well, at least I have the safety net of a pension plan that I'm contributing towards throughout my whole life. But the CPP, as you basically put it, it's a form of Ponzi scheme in a sense. I mean, when it's pay as you go, you're constantly relying on new young people to keep filling up the bottom to fund the ones who got to the top. It's not a sustainable long-term plan.
It is the very definition of a Ponzi scheme. When you pay to people more than what they have earned with their savings and rely upon newcomers, that is a Ponzi scheme. And to sort of rub salt into the wound, it is deceitful, because the people who run the CPP, they conceal the unfunded liabilities or debts of this program. If you were to have a private pension plan that was 68% unfunded, and that's by their numbers, and I don't believe their numbers, so it's worse than that in reality, but 68% unfunded, that would immediately generate regulatory scrutiny for being an irresponsible or fraudulent plan.
So getting out of that, now, as you said, it just gets back to what we're talking about in sovereignty, in a sense, and getting away from these massive government programs. I noticed one of the commenters there, Wes Wayne, it looks like says, Canadian sovereignty is when we use cash instead of credit, and this digital shift is definitely not sovereign. I don't know if you read your book or not, because that's kind of what you get onto further, though, is the importance of cash, because we've got a real pushing people away from cash and into digital forms of currency or trackable currency, which may or may not work for people, but it definitely puts you at risk as a sovereign individual, doesn't it?
Yeah, so look, nations that have better governance, and you even mentioned this in your own book, an admirable nation is Switzerland, which has great decentralization. Ironically, even though they're extremely civilized and advanced, they use a lot of cash. People have confidence in the currency, right? And they are able to enjoy privacy and independence. Look, The prospect of central bank digital currencies is one that is coming. The Bank of Canada has already looked into this. They did this, I think it was maybe 5 years ago now. They researched the opportunity. When they feel threatened, when they feel like the loonie is under threat from cryptocurrencies, they will push back with their own central bank digital currency, which, yes, it does enable a greater form of control over the population because it can have negative interest rates. It's much easier to cut people out of that system. So yes, it is a concern. And I promote in the book both cash, cash transactions, what I call the gray market or informal market. And there are various cryptocurrencies now that are designed specifically to mimic cash so that even the person receiving the transaction or receiving the benefit doesn't know who is sending it. So it's much like when you go into the church and you make a voluntary donation, no one knows how much you gave or didn't give. There are cryptocurrencies now that are replicating that.
Okay, so whatever currencies you may get, if you've tried to distance yourself away from digital government control currencies, the next thing you still want some degree of something you can invest in. And I mean, it's like I said, there's a whole lot. I'm kind of rushing through with your book. You talk capital markets and that areas that you might want to invest, but we got a government getting in and regulating or centralizing regulation, and that puts your investments at risk there. So, I mean, it's hard to find a safe haven anywhere.
Yeah, so good. This is the challenge, Corey. Many of us can see the writing on the wall in terms of Canada's struggling future. And the question is, are we just going to complain about it, or are we going to do things? And I want to promote your book, actually. Everyone should get this one. It's one of my favorites, The Sovereigntist's Handbook. And so that's one way of breaking out of the mold. But so I seek to give as much as possible actions. There's no magic cure to Canada's ails, but yes, in terms of your own activities, Canada does have relatively well-functioning capital markets, and you can access alternatives of what I call real assets, which perform better in an inflationary environment. And in particular, yes, I focus on precious metals and mining. They are the go-to in that they're the most protected, and they will have the most upside value when inflation comes in or grows. I go through different types of vehicles, whether you want to go to streaming companies, whether you want to go to junior miners, seniors, there's all, you know, want to have physical possession. So that's one thing you can do right away, divert some of your savings or your discretionary income to real assets.
And again, some of those real assets, Jordan, one of my commenters I see mentioned, you know, gold, like precious metals, and they've been climbing, you know, slowly but steadily, yes. I think, for decades. Yeah. Is it a good hedge for people in general to get into silvers, gold, some of those metals? Or?
Absolutely. Right now, and I'm not sure what it is in terms of the Canadian dollar, but in the U.S., it's climbed to record heights, about 2,200. And I feel confident that it can get to 3,000 before year end. That this is a great time to buy. It was a great time to buy a year ago, but you know, still a good time to buy. And there was a prominent article with the CFA Institute, with the Chartered Financial Analyst Institute, that went through three reasons why, this was 3 years ago, gold should already have been at $3,000 US. So the case is even stronger now.
Okay, so you kind of go into, I mean, one of our challenges we have, there's things we want to do as sovereign individuals or individuals, but we have a very constraining government. And you kind of hit a hot button in chapter 10 with the, you know, why the Freedom Convoy? You talked a bit about that, but why it feigned to gain favor? Because as you point out, a lot of Canadians were pretty supportive of the War Measures Act, the Emergencies Act, you know, being imposed upon citizens. And we've got a cultural thing of some pretty compliant Canadians you got to get beyond.
Yeah, this strikes right to the heart of the problem. And this is why I wrote the book, because political solutions in the current environment that favor freedom, good luck with that, right? Because unfortunately, and we could go, this is a long history, but the Laurentian Canadians seem to have a much more interventionist or busybody mentality. They're quite happy to control free speech or impose harm upon those who go against them, right? And so whether it's kicking you out of your job because you don't want to take a vaccine, or ideological, let's say, retribution. So Frances Whittison is a prominent case in Alberta where she was a professor who had lost her job just because she spoke what she believed to be the truth about Canadian history. And so my personal view, and someone recently asked me, I'm it's not a secret, I'm here in Colorado and I'm a Canadian citizen, but I live in the United States. Someone asked me, what would it take me to get back to Canada? And the short answer really is that Western independence, that there is a problem, that there's an ideological problem that about, let's say, 20% of the country or 25% of the country is largely freedom oriented and the other 75% is not. And the prairie provinces, Alberta, Saskatchewan, Manitoba, maybe some of BC, which is not a prairie province, but some of the people are on board, they have much more, let's say, ideologically or culturally in common with the likes of Wyoming, Montana, Idaho, than with the rest of Canada. And they would form a more cohesive and, in my view, a prosperous country that would be attractive for people like me and other people who are more freedom-minded. And you would attract people from all across Canada who share that view.
Yeah, so I mean, your solution chapters, and there's quite a few of them on how to opt out of the cashless society, setting up LLPs, all sorts of things, you know, there's just more than we can get into in this show. But I mean, I like how you laid out the problem, which is what we talk about, unfortunately, on this show a lot.
Yeah.
And you laid out a lot of the solutions, which is really important. I mean, it's easy to point out the problems. It's harder to point out the solutions and how people can at least protect themselves from that. So before I let you go then, you know, how are people going to find your book and get a copy for themselves? I'd hold one up like you did, but
this is the book, although I guess the green screen is not liking it, but Financial Sovereignty for Canadians is the one, and you can get it on Amazon. Thank you, mate. Amazon.com or Amazon.ca if you're in Canada. It is the way to go. I'd love to have feedback and reviews, and if the response is positive enough, I will make an updated or expanded edition with feedback.
Great. And yeah, just a heads up to people. Yeah, you are on CA and .com. And for technological Luddites like myself, I went to .com at first and had a whole bunch of grief trying to get the darn book and then realized I'm in Canada, go to .ca, and it worked as smooth as you can get after that. Yeah. So just a heads up to other people going out to grab it. Aside from the book, you've got a social media presence. Where can people find you? Because you speak quite elsewhere as well.
In terms of the more political stuff, I do mostly on Twitter. If you want more finance, it's LinkedIn. So I'm easy to find. Fergus Hodgson. My name is rare enough that I'm pretty much the first one who will come up. And you can also go to econamericas.com, my website for business or for consulting. But really, my hope is that this book will introduce people to my ideas, and then they'll see whether they want to work with me or not. And Corey, also, I want to say, as you know, I really admire your work. And I'm a big fan. This your own book influenced my chapter on the Wexit idea, particularly promoting, let's say, let's be less negative about it and more positive about the opportunity, which I think was really did shape my own view on the topic.
I appreciate that. Yeah, we got to look forward rather than all on the negative and, you know, look at exactly. things like separation and things like that doesn't have to be a negative at all. Well, thank you very much for joining us and thank you for putting this all together in a book for us, Fergus. And I hope we get to talk again soon.
You're welcome, Corey. Thanks for having me.
All right, thanks. So, yes, that was Fergus Hodgson. Boy, I mean, I'm just tongue-tied today. But, yes, Financial Sovereignty for Canadians. This says untether yourself. Look it up, guys. It's on Amazon. And, Amazon's great. People might not like the company and some things and this and that. But, hey, they're good for authors. You can get something up there and really get it out there. Distribute fast. The price is good. And he has lots of great advice to offer for us. So, we got a lot of craziness. You know, I'm going to hit on one thing before I get to Franco there, who I see getting ready on deck. And I don't know if you've been watching in Argentina, you know, that president there, Javier Milei, I could be mispronouncing it, but the dude with the crazy hair going on, it seems that some of our best libertarian leaders always get the wild hair. There's something about that. I think mostly it's just they're focused on their politics and, somewhere way down the lines, worrying about their hair is not a top priority for them. But he's just been in Argentina, just going through that country with a chainsaw, and it needs it. So does ours. But, sounds like he's planning on firing 70,000 government workers. And I'm really looking forward to seeing what happens. I'm not looking forward to, 70,000 people. Some are going to really suffer because of that. They'll have lost jobs and things like that. But, everybody's always dire doom and gloom if we cut government workers. Oh, the services we'd lose. Well, you know what? I got a feeling he's going to cut 70,000. People aren't going to see service really decline that much. I mean, in Canada, we've been adding and adding and adding government workers year after year after year. One of the things I see in the city of Calgary, every time I drive by a federal office, the irony of the name of it, Service Canada office, is a big lineup of people standing out there shivering in the cold out on the sidewalk. Because our government somehow is incapable of doing something as simple as a passport renewal without having a mountain of bureaucrats and weeks of time. And the service is terrible. So if adding more people to the civil service doesn't make the service better, I contend that cutting a bunch out of there isn't going to make it any worse. But it'll save us some money. All right, let's speak of some overpaid civil servants we have, though. And those are the ones that we elect as members of parliament. And it looks like a bunch more are going to be able to pop up to the trough now, thanks to a little change in the election date. Franco Terrazano for the Canadian Taxpayers Federation. Hey, Franco, thanks for joining us today.
Hey, Corey, happy to be on.
So, it was kind of last minute, but this is a good one. Wow, suddenly this religious holiday became so important that the Trudeau government had to reschedule the election. That was the reason they did it, right?
Well, no. I mean, let's just say the obvious. If you're going to change the election, why don't you just move it a week early, not a week late? Well, the obvious answer is because it looks like the government wants to make sure that 80 additional MPs can get that sweet, sweet, sweet taxpayer-funded pension. So, folks, if you're not aware, here's what's going on. So any MP elected in the 2019 federal election, well, they're not eligible for their pension until October 21, 2025. Now, the scheduled election is for October 20th, 2025. So what do the feds do? Well, they're now going to try to bump the election back to October the 27th of 2025. And that would mean that 80 additional MPs would be eligible for that pension. And the total cost could be up to $120 million. But Corey, look, I'm not naive. I guess it's probably unlikely that all 80 of those MPs were to lose their seat. But if even half of those MPs lose their seat, then moving the election 1 week back would cost taxpayers tens of millions of dollars.
And it just shows how lucrative that gross federal pension plan is. I mean, you only have to actually serve 6 years before yep. you gain that entitlement to a pension. I mean, even if you only put 6 years in, you're going to blow away the return on a whole lifetime of paying into the CPP with what you're going to get back out of this thing. You can see why it's so important to them, I guess, to make sure that their outgoing members can get their noses into the trough before they leave.
You want to hear how lucrative it is, Corey? So some MPs, for some MPs, just working 6 years could get a lifetime pension of more than $2 million. Okay? Just 6 years of being an MP and a lifetime pension of more than $2 million for some of these MPs. Now, the starting annual pension, just the starting annual will be anywhere from about $32,000 for like the backbencher all the way up to $49,000. And that would be for like Minister Anita Anand, Minister Stephen Guilbeault. His starting annual pension will be around $48,000. But yeah, just to tie a bow on it, I mean, come on, some MPs serving 6 years and could get a lifetime pension of $2 million plus. It's crazy.
Well, and the maximum Canada pension plan, I think if we receive, if you receive the maximum, you're going to get about what, 18,000 a year, I think, something like that. So we don't even get half of what these guys get after 6 years. It's just absurd and obscene, but it's not all that, you know, surprising out of these guys too. So, I mean, you know, I'll leave you with that though. What on earth can we do about it?
Well, look, this hasn't passed yet, right? This is just a legislation with proposed amendments. So it hasn't passed yet. And, you know, I'll just give some credit where credit's due. I did hear Mr. Pierre Poilievre, the leader of the official opposition, on a radio show say that he's opposed to moving it a week back so that all these extra MPs could get a pension. So it looks like Mr. Poilievre and the Conservative Party are at least going to fight that change. And so are we. It hasn't become law yet. There's still time to raise a stink about it, to pressure this government. And because look, like, here's the obvious thing. If the government is going to move the election because of a religious holiday, okay, that's one thing, but make it a week early. Make it a week early, right? And my message to politicians is this. If you don't want to look shady, stop doing shady stuff like this.
I don't think they're worried about it anymore. That's the sad part. That was kind of what I said at the start of the show. You know, now that this is a government that's kind of on the way to the exit, and a lot of them are just seeing, how can I fill my pockets before I get out the door, or my friends? And, you know, so you guys are going to be pretty busy, I got a feeling, in this next year and a half, as you're watching for the patronage appointments and the, you know, grants to companies and things like that that seem to happen every time Liberals are on their way out. So I appreciate your work. And, you know, I'm certain we'll be hearing a lot more from you guys as these things surface in the next little while.
Oh, you sure will, Corey. And hey, folks, don't forget, the same day they raise your carbon and alcohol tax, April 1, they're also giving themselves another pay raise.
Yes, and a massive one. We actually want to talk about that before. So where can people find out about what you guys are up to, Franco, and, you know, keep right up to date with you guys tracking the outrageous spending?
Well, head over to taxpayer.com. And if you want to know more about those pay raises ranging from an extra $8,000 to an extra $16,000, well, it's all there at taxpayer.com. And you can check out our newsroom.
Well, that's awesome, Franco. Thanks for taking the time to quickly check in with us today. I'll let you get back to digging through all those exciting government documents, and I look forward to what you guys expose next.
Awesome. Thanks, Corey.
Great. Thanks. It is Franco Terrazano of the Canadian Taxpayers Federation. Yeah, he's always got, they give him lots to work with, that's for sure. I mean, just one thing after another. As he said, we had him on a couple weeks ago. We talked about April 1st, a bunch of taxes growing up. And yeah, a bunch of MPs are getting raises. They're getting rewarded for taking more money from you. It's a pretty ugly cycle. And, you know, a perfect response. Because, yeah, hey, if you, there's no way you could have held the election on that day, why not go a week earlier? Come on, what's a week? But we know, because it's going to get them those extra pension qualifications. And some people have been saying, oh, but most of those who are going to qualify for that are Conservative MPs. And that's true. But the truth of it is, too, if things don't change, and I know a year and a half is a long time in politics, most of those Conservative MPs are actually going to probably retain their seats in the next election. This move is most going to benefit those who are either not going to run in the next election or don't win their seats back in the next election. And there's no... what was I about to say? Yeah, there's just no other way to make that out. Now, yeah, and I say, okay, well, I'll address a commenter. This gets back to one of the things, and I appreciate that you're watching the show, but you're going on about some of that detax crap, and it's garbage, and we've heard it a long time. And I say, Corey will never tell people to refuse to file taxes. Yes, you're right. I won't tell people that. There's always been those things going on. I remember since the 90s, it was the detax movement back then and things like that. And now it's the sovereign individuals, things like that, saying, if you refuse to take part in it, you can distance yourself. You can legally break yourself away from the Canadian tax system and so on. Guys, it doesn't work. It never works. A lot of people have gone broke trying those things. Look, we need to fix our taxes up. We need to do a lot of different things. but I am not. No, you're right. I am not going to counsel people not to file their taxes. I want to see our taxes cut. I want to see people use every possible way to distance themselves from paying more taxes than they have to. But I won't go into the conspiracy garbage that Wes Wayne is putting out and telling people not to file their taxes. And then, yes, now he's responding, Corey's an indoctrinated dumbass. Yes, actually, Wayne, I'm controlled by the aliens and the Illuminati and all the rest of those things. They're the ones telling me what to do. And they're telling people to file their taxes. No, I'm just not going to give bad advice on here. And you can give the bad advice that you like. I suggest to people, and there's a lot of good, wise fiscal management you can do. That's the stuff that Fergus is putting in there, ways that you can set up LLPs, do things to distance yourself from taxation as much as reasonably possible. Let's change some government so we aren't getting taxed as badly as we have been. But don't go down those rabbit holes of thinking there's some sort of loophole that can get you out of that. You're just going to find your property getting seized and get yourself into a whole lot of trouble. So no, I won't tell people to do that on this show. Don't hold your breath for it. Speaking of taxes and speaking to the problems, you know, we got going on. And this is things. So the conference board came out. This is an interesting one. It says the oil emissions cap. You see, this is another thing coming out of Trudeau. This is part of his obsessive climate change battles. And his, you know, part of it too, I think, is he wants to, you know, on his way out, try to succeed where his dad failed in fully crushing Alberta. And I tell you, Pierre crushed Alberta pretty badly, but Alberta came back. But Alberta was the province that dared to stand up to old Pierre. And Justin doesn't like that. And of course, Alberta's still standing up to the Liberals and still standing up to the latest incarnation of a Trudeau prime minister. So he's got this oil emissions cap. This, you know, not enough people are talking about that. And the conference board figures that's going to cost Alberta $4.5 billion a year by 2030. That's an estimate. That's just this emissions cap. Basically, they're working on illegalizing our ability to produce oil and gas. You know, we've got renewable energy isn't working, guys. It's not building fast enough and it's not effective enough. It doesn't work when the sun doesn't shine. It doesn't work when the rain doesn't, or when the wind doesn't blow. And there's a project down in Okotoks that just came out. That was from back a little less than 20 years ago. And the governments, I think it was the provincial and the federal governments, both pitched in over $3.2 million for 50-some houses to have full solar panel. They put power. They put panels on them, and they got their water heat from solar and power supplemented by solar, a whole bunch of it. And it was supposed to last for 25 to 30 years. Well, it's been less than 20 years. Turns out all those houses now are going to have to spend the money to go back to natural gas heat and regular conventional electricity, because the solar stuff wore out. It didn't last as long as they were told it would. We spent millions of dollars to prove with only 50 houses that it's just not economically feasible. Now, I know the technology is getting better and better, but the way it's going to work is if it gets good enough that it's worthwhile for us to do it, we'll do it. We will do it. If electric vehicles, of course, is the big one. You know, and I keep hearing people talking about, oh, they're great for this, they're great for that. Guys, if they were that great, we wouldn't need to subsidize the hell out of them to get people to buy them. And even then, people aren't buying them. Car companies are backing off. They're saying, we can't make more of these. People aren't buying them, even with massive, massive subsidies. And maybe the day will come. If an electric vehicle comes along that's, you know, in the $30,000 range of price, and it takes 20 minutes to charge maximum, and has a range of 800, 900 kilometers in cold weather, I might consider it. But we aren't even vaguely close to any of those things with electric vehicles yet. They're a novelty. And that this novelty is costing us a fortune. You know, we got to let the market deal with it. Again, if it works, we will use it. On my fifth wheel trailer, I have a solar panel and I have battery sets because it's very practical and handy for me. I can go out boondocking. I can charge my batteries when I'm not connected to anything else. But that's what it is it's a novelty and it's a side thing. If we're talking about powering the nation on this stuff, it's not working. I saw some other stuff on, apparently, I haven't verified that, but a hailstorm sounds like did wreak havoc on a Texas solar farm. Because that's another thing that can happen is, of course, weather knocks down those solar projects and, hey, guess what? You've got no juice going on anymore. We still need fossil fuels or nuclear hydroelectric in the areas that have it. You see, what are we supposed to do? We only have so many rivers and creeks in Alberta. We can't go hydro like some of the areas. That's part of the problem too, is it's Quebec, it's Newfoundland, it's Ontario with the massive river systems and hydroelectric generation capability telling us out here while we're sitting on massive resources for natural gas and things for energy, but we shouldn't use it. We should switch to something else. Well, we don't have that luxury nearby of a big river to dam like that. So we use what we've got, and it's a very good source. Just to add one final thing, here's a beauty, and that's on the Western Standard site too. You know, look at the joys. 986 Gazans. You know, the people, Justin said, bring them on over because we need to bring more people from the heartland towards raping terrorism in the world and bring them here to Canada because we really need that. And lo and behold, with this 1,000 of them they brought in, guess what? Most of them are men. Yes, that's the nature of Gazans because they like supporting the groups that use their women and children as human shields. They can't come over here. Hamas won't have any shields anymore. The men come scurrying over here. How many of those 986 Gazans who are coming to Canada were ones who took part in and supported and helped build up the terrorist attacks of October 7th? I don't know, but now they're our problem. So they poke the hornet's nest. Israel, of course, predictably retaliates and defends itself, and it gets nasty. And where do the men go? They run for it, and they leave their women and children behind. Pathetic. We need immigration, guys. We need to have more people, but we need to have the right people. We need good, working, law-abiding people. And when you dip into the pool of Gazans who are willing to leave their women and children behind to come here, I don't think we're getting better quality Canadians out of this. But welcome to Canada and virtue signaling, right? Just one more way that Trudeau could give the middle finger to Israel. He seems to have quite an obsession with doing that as well. All right, guys, so that's the time I have for today. Thank you very much for tuning in. I appreciate it. Be sure to, you know, share the channel. Help us out. Get this out there. Subscribe to The Standard, as I said, and watch for our sponsors. You know, it's important. If you want to sponsor something too, buy advertising. We do it all, guys. So, hey, check in for the pipeline later on tonight. We'll have a panel. We'll talk about a bunch more issues, and I'll see you all again next week at this time with a whole new guest and a whole new bunch of issues to rant about. Thanks again. I'll see you then.